when he, this reminds me, when he asked me to start lecturing, and I said no, because first of all, I always worried about my accent, and sometimes people do not understand. And I said, I don't want to go through all that. And so he said, well, just try. So I did. I was lecturing in, where was that? Where is the Colgate University?
Rochester.
Well, that's where I was. And there was a professor was listening to me, and he spoke Russian. And so after, when I got through lecturing, he came up to me and spoke in Russian, and he said, would you mind terribly if I'll write it in the newspaper? He said, it's probably, well, I'll have to write in two different, part one and part two. Well, I thought that was kind of fun. He said it will be in Russian newspaper and it will go all over the world. Well, I didn't think much about it, and I said, fine. So that's the trouble with me. I never think about it. And so...
That's the good part. You're ready to act.
And so... And this is what it's really started. That's how it's worked out. This the article appeared and went to all over the world. And in Australia, that there's quite a few of our classmates there, or the friends from Harbin were there. And this one person was telling me she got the call from one of the much younger generation. And she called and she said, Olya, I think that's probably your generation, and I just wonder if you knew Musa Kutlea du Roche. She said, yes. You see, our mothers grew up together. And so we were together in school, and Mila, who is in Soviet Union there all the mothers were all very good friends, and we were very good friends, three of us. And Olga apparently was trying to find out where I was, and she couldn't find it. And so this article, and she said, of course, the maiden name and the first name, because Musa is a very rare name too. And Kutlea du Roche, well, she said yes. And so she told her. So she told her all about it. And so that's how it's happened. So believe it or not, a month later, no, just a few weeks later, we were going to, actually, Bud was invited to speak somewhere in Australia. So we went there, and so immediately I got, well, the other thing, Bud's aide, who was in Australia at that time. So Bud, when Bud was in the Navy, of course, he had an aide, Michael Spire, who's a wonderful, wonderful man, just wonderful. So Bud told him that, and we sent the address of my classmate to mention to her that we'll be there, and so I would like to see her. Well, Michael, of course, arranged everything. He already was there, got acquainted with all my classmates and all that. And so when we arrived, do you know, you don't have a name days. Are you familiar with the name? Yeah. We celebrate more name days than the birthday.
Like saint?
Saint, yes. Yeah. Saint birthday, yes, because you name after the saint, yeah. Yes. And we celebrate that more than the birthday, really. Most of the time, in the old tradition, whenever the baby is born, they look at the calendar and give the name. So you see your name day and your birthday usually at the same day. But my mother didn't like any names there.
So she
liked Musa. And the Musa, you see,
like her daughter.
So I was born in January, but my name day is in May. So I always said my mother was very, very clever, because this way, you see, I had two birthdays.
So, when was this event in Australia? When was
that? That was... Again, that's a very big date. Those names, there's Tatiana, yes. This is a big evening. I mean, Tatiana, it's again the name days. But it's also the Russians, during the Tsar, there used to be the students from the college usually celebrate that day. Why? Don't ask me. But and so Tatiana evening, it's...
Could you spell that?
Tatiana?
Mm-hmm. In English?
Tatiana. Yeah. Thank you. Well, first... and I know I have somewhere, and I have to look at it.
Okay. Those are the... Let's, what we need to do for a minute.
Okay.
Then we'll look at the pictures.
Okay.
What I need, because what we're doing now is the proposal. And once we have then a publisher, we can go back and do some really extensive interviewing. What I'd like to do is kind of take a 30 minutes and do a summary of the time periods.
Okay.
Without stories about them too
mm-hmm.
much.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got 1922, born.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved in 19... you were born in Harbin.
Mm-hmm.
And you moved when you were about 20, so you're talking about 40.
Well, but this... Well, okay.
So
yes.
Go ahead.
No, because...
The main move after you were born from Harbin to... You went to Shanghai with your mom, then to Peking, then back to
Shanghai. I was 18 or 19, something like that.
And then back to Shanghai. Where were you when the war ended?
In Shanghai.
Stayed in Shanghai.
Oh, yes.
After your mother had died.
Oh, yes. I couldn't go back to Harbin because it was just...
So when the war ends, you never did really go back to Harbin.
Mm-mm.
Where did you go from Shanghai?
To the United States.
So you met Bud in...
He met me.
He met you in, what is the difference there?
Oh, quite a bit. You see, he was the first officer who came to Shanghai with a 10 enlisted men. They captured the Japanese river gunboat, hoisted the American flag, and came to Shanghai. So, and I remember that evening, as a matter of fact, we were playing bingo. And it was a blackout. And I remember it was so dark. And the news were just going through, the war is over. And I remember when I heard that, of course, the heart was jumping, you know, but I was very skeptical about it. And I just didn't want to completely to be relaxed and to be disappointed. Actually, it's not over. Somebody made a mistake. That's what I was afraid of. And... I guess I didn't want to be disappointed, but they were saying there's a Japanese boat with American flag. And so everybody in the following morning went to see the boat with the Japanese flag, including myself. And then I had a Russian boyfriend. Actually, he wasn't Russian. I mean, he was Russian, but he wasn't my boyfriend. But we were good friends. And he, one day, he had a beautiful, beautiful operatic voice. Just beautiful. He was the classical. Just beautiful. And he couldn't find the job. So one day I remember he came and he said he met Americans and they got the job for him. Some restaurant or whatever it was, I don't know. And he said, because they were just so nice to him, that one was a captain and somebody else there, and he said he would like very much to thank them and to have a typical Russian dinner. And he said, I would like to ask Andy. I said, don't even bother. I don't want those Americans in our home. But he did ask my aunt, and she said, fine, she will have it. I remember I was so mad because, you know, the Americans were just terrible. You would just walk in the street and they whistle. And at first I didn't know what they whistled, but it's very, very ugly when somebody whistles at you. And there was kind of whistle that I never heard before. And I remember one day I was walking and there was a big truck, and I guess that was the soldiers, and they all whistle. I remember I came home and I was in tears. And my aunt had a friend, and I said, can you imagine? And I said, they all looked and laughing, and then I said, that the most hit his whistle. She already met some Americans. Her daughter met some of the Americans. And she said, no, that's how they... I don't remember exactly how she explained, but...
She rationalized.
Yes. I was insulted. And she said, no, you shouldn't be. I said, well, because in Russian, if anybody whistle, it just shows you...
Demeaning.
Yes. And then, you see, Americans, for some reason, decide that all the white girls, they were all working in cabaret. And so that's what just was maddening to me. And I said, well, I don't want those Americans in our home. And that was all to it. But my auntie told Nikki that it will be all right. So Nikki, I remember, said that, and you invite some of your friends. I said, listen, if I'll do that, you bring at least one, your fella, and I want to explain to them, or to him, whoever it's going to be. He was particularly talking about one. So I thought that was very important to this fella to explain. And so he brought this fella, and I was trying to explain to him that I will have my friends, but I want him to remember that none of them from cabaret or anything like that. It's just they come from very good families, and I want to remember that. So I went through all that. Well, they're supposed to come at 7 o'clock, something like that, for a dinner. And it was 6:30, that's right, 6:30. It's 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. All my friends were there, and of course we were all curious to see those Americans. And Nikki, ran constantly to the balcony, he will hear a noise, and he will run to the balcony, and then he will come back. No. So finally 9 o'clock, and Nikki heard the noise, so he went and showed it, and he said, they're here, they're here. So he went downstairs. He went downstairs, and then he came back very, very fast. And when he walked in, he literally was white as those shades. And I couldn't understand exactly what happened. But then when the guest arrived and I looked at that, I turned just as white as he was. Because this American, I was trying to explain to him that we're going to have the young ladies from the good families. So he brings his lady with him. And that was really very, very, as a matter of fact, dramatic. Because she realized she was in a different home. She was from cabaret. And the first thing, naturally, I look at Auntie, like Nikki walked in and started looking at Auntie. We all knew just to look at her. But you know, I have to tell you something, though. She realized that she was a lady. She really, and believe it or not, we became friends.
Was she Russian?
Russian, yes. And it was, in a way, very, very sad story. Very sad story.
Wonderful story. I can't wait to hear it.
And when...
Who was it that brought her?
Nikki's friend, who was the senior fellow. And I don't think he knew any better. I mean, well, anyway. But Olga actually was very, very good about it.
That was her name?
That was her name.
Olga.
I hope we're not going to use her name because she's here in Washington.
She is.
Uh-huh. And the thing is, what was so fascinating in a way, because you see, we met on the 1st of October, but proposed me on the 7th, and finally on the 22nd, we got married. But you see, we want to marry early because he could have been sent back home any time. But we couldn't get married because his commanding officer was somewhere lost with the ship.
Lost?
Well, he just... because Bob captured this Japanese gunboat, you see, with the 10 enlisted men. So he separates himself from the ship, and so they join him later on, but he's the first one to come to Shanghai. And
so put the captain somewhere else.
Yes, and so we had to wait for the captain to come back. So when he got back, and Bud told him he wanted to marry, and he said, no, that's ridiculous. He said, what do you have in common? Your language is different, religion different, culture different. He said, you know, I have been married 4 times. And he said, you know what my last wife did while I was fighting the war? She bought a mink coat. So he said, no. But Olga is the one who started talking to him. And
the captain.
Yes, to Bud's captain. And she was trying to tell him that, she said, you know, Musa is completely different. It's not what you meet or what Joe met, and she met herself even. She said she comes completely from the different family. And so, and she actually was
a go-between.
Yes, which I didn't know at the time at all.
That's touching.
So, yes.
Because you could have wiped her out.
Well, of course. But I was very touched by her because I thought she realized when she walked in, and the other thing was very interesting to all of us, to the girls, because I'm pretty sure maybe a year or two difference between us. She was older a year or two, but she looked much, much, much older than all of us. We were just in front of her, just look like a
college kid.
Yes.
Young.
Yes. So
she lived a hard life.
Well, of course, and she did have a hard life. She did. She really, everything was in her life was very, very hard. But
did she marry here?
She married to this fellow, that Bud's friend.
Was Bud at that party?
Yes.
Oh,
and Bud,
he
yes, he met. He came to our home.
See, the culture difference there is hard for me to understand why you met, he met you.
Because he came to our house.
Oh, he met you.
That's right.
If you'd gone to his house, you'd have met him.
That's right. Or
you
some way.
You didn't use that at all.
Well, but this is, I'm
it
very...
helps understand who does what.
You see, the other thing, and that's how Bud walks in, you see, and this two or three officers were, and Olga was there, and Bud walks in, and he brought me something.
He brought you something?
Yes, and he was, whatever he was saying, I couldn't understand.
Still can't.
And then when I presume it was a some kind of paper, was wrapped in the paper, and I opened and I still didn't know what it was. So I went in the kitchen, but he was so excited about it, you see. So I remember I walked in the kitchen and told my aunt, and I was talking Russian because I was safe. I said, listen, I don't have a slightest idea what it's all about, but I say, please laugh and say, say thank you, because it must be something special. But I say, what it is, I don't know. And that was scotch. Well, I didn't have a...
it was like medicine.
Apparently very hard to get. We didn't have, apparently. But even if we had, we didn't use it that. I mean, I even didn't drink. Only the wine I drank, and that was it. Even then, I didn't drink the wine. So scotch didn't mean a thing to me, and he said, scotch. And he repeated, and I still couldn't. I said, smile, smile, tell him, and be please excited about it. So Auntie did very well. So that's how it
that
happened.
That's a funny story. Now, what date was that? October 1st?
I think that was October the 1st, yes.
1945?
Yes, yes.
And 7 days later?
He proposed me. And then finally the captain arrived. And so, but we already started preparing for the wedding, you know.
Now, what, we want to get into that story, but I don't want to do it right yet.
Okay.
Just give me some more time frames. That on October 20...
22nd, we were married.
22nd, you were married. And when did you leave for the U.S.?
Then Bob left, whatever this Thanksgiving day.
Okay.
They left the ship. The ship was gone for Thanksgiving Day. And then...
So you lived together then only for 2 or 3 weeks.
That's right. And then I came here in March.
Of
1946.
So where did
I think it's in March.
This is just close. We can check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go after he left from Thanksgiving? Did he go back down the river in the boat?
Yes, they had the destroyer, and so they went to the destroyer back home, and they were telling me all that about Thanksgiving Day, which I didn't know anything
Scotch
about.
And turkey and Christmas tree.
Yes. Christmas tree, we knew that.
How so, did you get from Shanghai then to...
And then I had to wait for the... I should have gone on the Navy transport, you know, with the military. But at that time, you couldn't, I mean, it's only army. They want it or not, nobody asked them, but they had to take me on the army transport. So I was in the American army transport, 4,000 GIs, 200 war brides, and 100 civilians. I will never forget that.
We went from Shanghai by ship.
By ship.
All the way to Philippines or where?
No.
I mean, all the way around.
Supposed to come to San Francisco. But you see, we were typhoon, all different storms. We got just in everything. And then I got very, very sick. And I remember they put me in a sick bay. And then they put me with all the nurses so they could look after me because I was deadly sick. And
sick?
Yes,
oh, I hate that.
It's
the worst thing possible.
And I will never forget. And I told, of course, I just came back from the sick bay, and that, and I said that, you know, we're not moving. Those nurses looking at me, and they said, "My gosh, all those foreigners! They were surrounded with those war brides," and I'm pretty sure they thought we were all very peculiar, and they sort of kind of mentioned. Well, how is that? The ship wouldn't. I said, we're staying still. I said, the ship is not moving. So finally, they look out and they say, you know, we're not moving. And the ship was just going like this, because with all 4,000 GIs and all that, but no cargo. So it was just like a little, you know, it was horrible. It's just terrible. They lost some kind of screw, and so they SOS. And then we didn't know exactly how long it will take.
Oh.
But so we had to wait till that somebody was on the way. Well, whatever it was, and they fixed. But, you know, we sat there for quite a while. And so then from there, we supposed to arrive to San Francisco. But here was a storm, too. We went through the typhoon and different storms. You just name it, apparently, and we got all to that. And then we couldn't land it in San Francisco because, again, though, it was some kind of storm. So we finally landed in Seattle. And I will never, never forget, there was a little soldier. He just constantly was following me everywhere. And I don't know exactly. And he said that, but you know, your husband is in Charleston, but we are landing in San Francisco. He said, you know, it's a distance. But when he showed me in the map, I really didn't think it was that bad. And I said, no, I said, it's not. It doesn't matter. He will be here. And then we went to Seattle, of course. I said, that's all right. But I will never forget, he said he cannot wait. When he'll get off of that ship, the first thing he will go and have a hot dog. And, of course, I took it literally. I didn't know what's the hot dog. So I went into the room. And there was a young woman who was married to an American, and she just went, got caught in Shanghai. She couldn't go back, so she spent the war there. But she was married to an American officer. And so I said, you never told me that Americans eat dogs. She said, they don't. I said, but he told me he's going to eat hot dog. So she explained to me, it's not really.
Oh, you must have had some terrible feelings.
Oh, I said, my gosh, I just thought.
What if I married?
That's right, exactly. Exactly, the thought.
How did you get from Seattle now to Charleston?
Well, then the other thing, Bud forgot to tell me that he had some relatives there. But they're, of course, with a different name. But it's his stepsister-in-law.
In Seattle.
But I didn't know anything about. All of a sudden, somebody, the captain announced, and Mrs. Amold, if you please to get to my cabin. And so this lady, the Russian, she said that Musa, they're calling you. I said, well, why should I go? And she said, apparently captain wants to tell you something. So I went there, and I remember going there, I saw a man, and he was just flashing something. He opened his jacket, and there was something sparkling, because the sun was there. And so finally, I didn't like that. So I went back to the room, and she said, why are you here? Because they're calling you. I said, well, I don't know. He has something flashy on his chest, and everybody just kind of, I don't know them, so why should I go? And so finally she said, no, you better go. So I did. And then Irene, looking to explain to me that she's Bud's sister-in-law, and of course tried to explain in-law, I mean with the relatives in English, I just was completely lost. So finally she showed me some pictures, I guess, and I kind of put the two and two together. So I
she
said,
didn't speak Russian.
No.
Sister-in-law.
Yes. So.
What was flashing?
Well, that was her uncle, who is the chief of the police. You see.
In Seattle,
and so he's a big shot, and so they, because you see, everybody was still standing on the, nobody was permitted to come on the ship. But they were on the ship, and that's why I didn't like that. And then he flashes something. I just
he was showing his badge.
He's showing his badge. That's right. That's right.
That made you nervous.
Yes.
They look like police or something.
Well, I thought it's something. I just didn't want to get that's in any really problem.
Story. Now, did they take care of you and then get you to Charleston?
Yes, and then.
By train?
No, on the plane. And so then they explained to me the whole damn thing. Well, and here's again, though.
In English?
Oh, yes, in English.
Oh.
But I think when I left, they probably were really very, very relaxed about it, because we were going to go somewhere, and it was in Seattle, and it was chilly. Yeah. So I need my coat. So I didn't know. They got my coat, and then they hang up. Outside it was drizzling, so sort of kind of all the wrinkles would come off. And I saw my coat there, but also at the same time, I saw there was a big truck, whatever it was, and we'll go just a little bit, and the man will jump out of that truck, and will pick up something, and then they will get back on the truck, and then they will come again to the next house, and they will get it. At first I just watch that, but then the rebels, they're getting closer and closer to my coat. So, so I realized it was just very short distance for them to get to our house. So I ran down and I said, listen, my coat. And they say, yes, your coat is hanging. I said, well, this is it. Well, the truck. Well, this is the garbage man. They're going to steal my coat. You see?
You couldn't figure out what he was doing.
No, I couldn't figure it out, you see, but I knew he was picking up something, and of course there's my coat.
So where was your coat?
Hanging on the line there. They had a clothesline outside. Truck. Yes. And so they put it there. So
this is in Seattle.
That's in Seattle.
And you always need a coat, and it's always wet in Seattle.
Yes, yes.
So you flew back to where?
Supposed to meet me in New York. Well, actually, from Seattle, I flew to Tulare. That's where I met
Tulare,
California. That's where
airports in Tulare.
No, but it's, I think
San
it's
Francisco.
San Francisco, I guess, or whatever. And that's where Elma was born, you see. Our son was born there. And Elma had a very interesting birth certificate. The doctor is the father, Elma Russell Zamol. The doctor, Russell, Elma Russell Zamol. And then the baby. So, and then from there, I went and spent the time with my sister-in-law. And then I spent there, I guess, Dos Palace in California.
Dos Palace.
Dos Palace. That's, what is that? The closest.
Northern
Fresno? Fresno?
Yeah.
Well, it's about 2 hours by automobile,
okay.
Right there. So, and then finally Bud said that, well, he will be able to come and meet me in New York. So then I was flying from Dos Palace, which I suppose from Dos Palace to San Francisco, and from San Francisco to fly to New York. And Dick, he was my brother-in-law, he's a very sweet fellow. He just couldn't figure out how I will carry the baby and the bottles and some other thing. So he did something, he built something so it would be easier on me, but actually it was just too many things I had to carry, but I accepted that. So he said, both of them, Sarli, as a matter of fact, said the same thing, don't worry about it because those hostesses, airline hostesses, they will take care of most of the things, so don't worry about it. So I presume they will help me. So I got in the plane finally, you know, from Fresno, which was flying to San Francisco, and it was just a full house, that plane. So I was waiting for everybody to come out, and then I thought that would, because with all the bottles, the diapers, and the baby I had to carry, so I decided I better wait till everybody will leave the plane. And so finally I came to the conclusion everybody was out. So I just came out of that, the seat, and tried to carry it, and all of a sudden the diapers fell, the bottles. That's it. And all of a sudden I hear the voice. He said, oh, the little mother. So I look, and there was three men, and I didn't see them, because apparently they were sitting still in the seat. But then finally they decided it's time to go. And why? I will tell you why. Because this particular one was very, very tipsy. So he says that we have to help this little mother. And I thought, not with the baby. And I thought, but I could get the help enough with my diapers and the bottles. And he figured it out. The other two men were perfectly all right. So they did help me to come off the plane. But the most shocking thing was, when I got to the door, there were about 20 people waiting for this man. Who was tipsy. Tipsy man. They were waiting for him. All in the evening gowns, black tie suit. And of course, I was probably so ignorant, it could have been some movie star or something like that, but I don't have a slightest idea who he was. But the funniest part of it, when I was in San Francisco, all these 20 people, or maybe less than that, but it seems to be like it was a big crowd. It was, though. They all, because I told him, as long as they carry some other, they better deliver everything so I wouldn't have to struggle with it. So, and he said, which gate? No, I asked him what gate I'm supposed to go. So they found what gate, because there are plenty of people to find. So they told me which gate to go. And they took me to the gate, and they say, now, they all went following.
Not like a Fellini movie.
It's just following. So he said, well, little mother, now you're all here. So now, just, this is all. And I thought that would be all my problems are just solved. and I have to wait something like 2 hours for the plane. It was changed. So, and Sarli was telling me, take the bottle to the counter where they have a ticket or so, and tell them what the plane you're catching, and so they will take the bottles to the plane. So when you, and be sure that they will remember that. So I went and I said, may I put that formula on the ice somewhere? They say, yes, they will take care of it. And I said, here's my plane ticket and here's the number. He said, fine. So he wrote it down and everything. And finally, I got in the plane. And I remember I saw this hostess there. And I said, listen, I want to be very sure. But you see, I guess very sure that the bottles, the formula, will be here at 11 o'clock or midnight. So I said, be sure to remember or to check if you have my formula here for the baby. She said, oh, yes. She was flirting with the man. She was sitting there. And I realized she didn't want to listen to me. But I was very persistent about it. And so I went back and I said, listen, because with the baby, at 11 o'clock, I'm supposed to feed the baby. So I want to be sure that you'll bring the formula. And she said, yes, 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 I know that. So I got in the plane. All of a sudden, I almost started crying. And I realized it was getting time that for the formula. So that stupid air hostess came up and I said, well, I called her, she came, and I said, well, did you bring the formula? What formula? I said, but I mentioned to you the formula I left there on the airport. They were taking care of it, and you're supposed to get it. And that's what I was trying to tell you, but you were so busy to talking to that man that you completely didn't listen. She said, well, tomorrow we'll be in New York. I said, well, so what? She said, well, the baby can't wait. I said, listen, you do not understand. She said, well, I say, I want to talk to the pilot. And she said, no. But I realized I was so nervous that I couldn't even speak English, you know, clearly, because I was so nervous about the whole damn thing. She said, no, 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 I will take care of it. So she went to the pilot and explained what happened. And so naturally, they want to check my story. So they called the airport, and sure enough, the bottles were still there in the icebox or whatever. And so all of a sudden, they announced they have to land it due to the emergency. So everybody started worrying about it, but they said for the formula. So
they landed.
So they asked me for the formula. But you see, I really even didn't know how to make the formula, what the proportion's supposed to be, because I was very, very sick. As a matter of fact, I almost died after the birth. I was very, very, with the temperature 102 and so my brother-in-law, who took care of the formula and everything else, and all of a sudden, you see, it was all my responsibility. So apparently I remember something about it. So they called the hospital. And believe it or not, the nurse was meeting us, and the manager, whatever you call, of the airport, he was very apologetic, but he was there. And of course, that didn't...
What airport is this? San Francisco?
No. That is somewhere, nowhere.
Oh, that's right.
It was after we already left San Francisco.
So it was a stopover.
It's a stopover, just an emergency landing. So they got in touch with the hospital, gave the formula, and the nurse came, and finally the manager of the airport told me wherever we're going to go next, the nurse is going to be waiting there with the formula. So fine. Well, Elma drank the milk and he was perfectly happy. So when I landed finally in New York, I told Bud what happened. So Bud wrote a letter, 3 pages, and send it as a telegram for 3 pages. Send them, collect. And you have to ask Bud. Bud will tell you the story. I mean, the contents of that. The the manager of the airport there, Lieutenant, I hope you will understand, but you know it's the war, and of course you cannot depend on the people because they just, well, he gave a wonderful apology, you know. And I survived because finally we arrived, when I arrived to New York, and that very fancy Red Cross lady, beautifully dressed with the Red Cross about that big, and Bud was standing there with some officer, and they were laughing. It's probably one of the rich ladies who just, you know, even the nurse had to deliver that. And that's when he realized it was delivered my formula. He couldn't believe it, the story, you see. He couldn't believe it. And I said, well, but that's how it was. So I said, as long as they deliver in the formula, it's fine.
That's a history of that's called a milk run.
But, you know, that the hostess really didn't know anything about the babies. And, of course, I was convinced they're very well trained and they know that. Try to tell the baby, don't cry, because tomorrow we'll be in New York.
Wait.
Yes. So that was ridiculous. But anyway, they, believe it or not, they sent an apologetic letter and 12 bottles, brand new bottles.
As a gift.
As a gift.
You must have had a nightmare going across the country.
Yes.
It must have been awful.
Well, first of all, you see, because there was a, I think it was the same trip. No, once I was flying, that I didn't have the baby then. But everybody got off. So I did too. Because what's the reason, I don't know. But they definitely said, you know, gesture that get out. So I did. I even didn't know the reason, though. But I went and followed everybody where they went. And so then when I got to, I think that was, that's right, I didn't have the baby. That was just still, I was expecting. And Irene in Seattle, what she did, because I had the problem, nickel and dime. For some reason, to me, it's more logical. Nickel was a dime, because it's bigger.
It's bigger.
Yes. So I just couldn't. That is just, for some reason, I just couldn't accept it. So I had a problem. So finally, she wrote it down and scotch taped all the money. You know, the dime and the nickel, and of course the quarter, that wasn't the, but the nickel and the dime, that was just really, I had a problem. So she said that if you need a coffee or so, you just go to the counter and they will just choose what you want. And then they will tell you how much. I said, fine. So I was watching all the other people, what they were doing. And so finally I realized she was coming and going to tell me what. So I got my piece of paper. But I couldn't find out what she was telling me. So she got curious and she started leaning over. So I finally gave it to her. And apparently because it's, I need so many nickels and quarters and all, I guess all combined that. Finally, but I just didn't think about it. I was so nervous because, first of all, I didn't know why we'd landed there. I knew one thing, they didn't expect it to be landed there.
This is when you're landing in somewhere between Seattle, or is this when the baby flight?
No, that's before the baby.
So that, you flew from Seattle somewhere on the way to Tulare?
Yes.
Okay.
No, that's when I flew. Gosh, I can't remember now. Because from Seattle, you see, I flew to, I guess maybe this is it. I think I had the baby, that's right. And then, no, it's just something there, it's not, I have to ask about that.
The story is fit, one of those flights.
Yes.
We can find out. Now, you landed then in 1946 in...